This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate. Then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is On the Media. I'm Bob Garfield.
And I'm Brooke Gladstone. One of the first memes to emerge alongside the pandemic proclaimed that, quote, humans are the virus. The idea that while hundreds of thousands of people are dying and so many more shelter behind closed doors, the air and waters are cleaner and clearer and nature's healing. Take the popular story of pandas mating after a decade of efforts by zookeepers. That really happened, though it's not clear if the pandas' newfound privacy was a factor. But some of the most popular stories about nature bouncing back in this moment are not real. The viral story about dolphins returning to the canals of Venice, that never happened. The story that elephants in China got drunk on corn wine and napped in a field during quarantine.
How great is that? They got drunk!
No, they didn't. Brian Kahn is managing editor at Earther.com. He says that fake news aside, there's a dangerous belief inspiring far too many variations of the meme that coronavirus is good for the environment. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
You began to think that this trope was becoming sort of a problem when you saw it on CNN.
Blue skies in several Chinese cities. The air pollution has improved, especially Wuhan.
There's a piece from mid-March and said there's an unlikely beneficiary of coronavirus, the planet. And that's a dangerous way to think of it because it divorces us from our relationship with the planet. So that to me was a sign that, you know, these ideas were not just going around on Twitter. They were things that were actually becoming a part of the mainstream media coverage and framing of these issues.
But why is it wrong to think that nature is getting its due at this moment when humanity is being brought low?
Do I view what's happening with nature coming back positively in a vacuum? Sure, like it's great. I love to see whales returning to the waters around Vancouver. These things are really magical and they can spark your imagination. But for me, it sparks in my imagination to think, what can we do better to make sure that these things, you know, exist after this pandemic passes? Is an opening to think about creating a new world and not an opening to be like, haha, like humans are getting their comeuppance.
You wrote, those cheering the coronavirus as the answer to healing nature dabble in a handful of ideologies.
Yeah, the first thing it does bring up is this concept that's bubbled to the surface in recent years called ecofascism, seeing humans as a disease, as a virus. And that leads to a very dangerous place where who are we talking about as the disease? Who's getting wiped out? And I think with coronavirus, it's really laid bare when we talk about we are the virus, because this is a virus that's disproportionately affecting communities that are Black and brown, impoverished, people living near air pollution. There's a growing body of research showing that air pollution is really strongly correlated with deaths from COVID-19. And so when we talk about we are the virus, I mean, it's just a substitute for these very kind of racist and classist ideas. And then, you know, when it gets down to this other idea that nature and us are separate, that we're, you know, we're seeing the virus heal nature, that also plays into this idea that nature is this wall-off special place. And as a former park ranger, I am a big believer in national parks. I love them. But there's this kind of classic idea that nature exists within these parks. The boundary is there. Outside of that, it's the terrible human world. And we may draw boundaries on a map to show where a national park exists, but the atmosphere doesn't respect those boundaries, and certainly other human influences don't respect them either.
What do you think about the price of oil going into the negatives? People are cheering that. Do you think they're cheering for the wrong thing?
That kind of thinking really misses some really critical things to understand. While it shows that demand is really, really low right now, it also is a signal, at least to certain governments, like our current administration, that it's a great time to buy more oil and use more oil. And that's downside number one. But downside number two is really what it means for the people that are directly impacted by those negative prices, because negative prices means it's not profitable to dig oil out of the ground. We need to think about how to transition people out of the oil rig work, out of the coal mine work. Coal industry is a perfect example of all these coal companies that declared bankruptcy, wiped out miners' pensions, and CEOs scooted away with millions of dollars. That, to me, is an example of the exact thing we don't want to happen right now. That means taking, you know, this opportunity not to cheer people losing their jobs. It means we need to actually do what we can to support those people that are in precarious positions now in the fossil fuel industry. Mm-hmm. They need help. So when I look at the negative oil prices, I don't see it as a cause for cheering. I see it again as a chance to think about how do we make sure that we're supporting everyone through this transition that we need to go through.
Climate scientist Kate Marvel wrote in Drilled News this week that, quote, "There's a bad but persistent narrative that climate change and pandemics are caused not by greenhouse gases and viruses, but by human nature. We're greedy for food, shelter, adventure, self-fulfillment, human contact, and, says this narrative, we must be punished for our sins. But the current situation, death, poverty, loneliness, is an ineffective blueprint for climate solutions." That's what you're saying, right? That this schadenfreude we're feeling on nature's behalf is not getting us closer to a solution. It may be pushing it farther away because it suggests that the very presence of human beings means that catastrophic global warming is inevitable.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, we've seen at least this year that there's projected to be a 6% drop in carbon emissions, which is great. That's basically what we need to do every year for the next decade to stave off the worst impacts of climate change. I mean, it's real and it's also a drop in the bucket. And there is a concern that when we come back from this, there will be this rebound effect if we just go back to business as usual, because suddenly folks may want to hop a flight to Aruba to sort of blow off some steam. We may see industrial production pick back up. There are all these things that could potentially happen if we want to just go back to the way we were. But I think, you know, there's this opportunity that we can again think about the things we want to change and actively work to change them when we do eventually get a vaccine, come out of this pandemic, and start to build the world of the 2020s that we actually want to see.
So what is it that we need to focus on? Give me some specifics here, because if you just say, now it's our time to do something, and people can't envision what that is, they're more likely to fall into pessimism.
One small thing that I've seen that's been really exciting to me is during the pandemic, you know, we've seen people be locked indoors, traffic has dropped, and a lot of cities have shut down streets. And now that they're planning for coming out of lockdown, some of these cities like Oakland, Milan, parts of Paris, they're thinking about keeping those streets permanently closed. So they're basically become slow streets open to people and bicycles, but not cars. It's a really interesting societal shift. It shows that maybe we can start to rely on ways of getting around that aren't cars. So, you know, that's one small thing. But then there are the bigger things. I mean, we certainly need to invest much more in renewable energy. We need to make sure that, you know, looking at the impacts that we've seen where these communities that have been choked by air pollution and are seeing higher death rates from COVID-19, how do we bring them into the solutions? That's why we need everyone on board to change and work on their own little part. We all need to come together and find these collective solutions that can really start to shift the entire system.
It doesn't fill me with inspiration to hear that I've got to get together if I don't know what it is I'm supposed to do that is going to make a material difference.
You know, part of it is actually just talking about these issues. There is a wealth of research out there showing that there is this so-called climate silence. People don't talk about climate change much because they think other people don't care. The reality is that 3/4 of Americans care about climate change and want action on it. They just don't know what everyone else does. You know, step one that any person can take listening to this right now is just to talk with your family, with your friends, with your neighbors about climate change, not just the things that worry you, although those are certainly really important topics, but also what can we do about it? What does the world that you want to live in look like? We as a society need to do a lot better job of trying to envision a better future. So I don't know if that gives you more or less hope, but honestly, those kinds of conversations are step one to really figuring out what we want.
Hope really is the issue, isn't it? I mean, Amanda Hess wrote in the New York Times, There's a tantalizingly dark escape in getting a glimpse of nature that we cannot otherwise see because we're always out there ruining the view.
When you think of it that way, it's easy to say, well, how are humans ever going to exist in this? We have done a lot of bad stuff, so it's better to imagine the world without us. I don't, like I said, subscribe to that view at all, but I can understand where it comes from, and I think that that's where we're seeing this meme, why it's taking such a strong hold right now.
It's fatalistic.
It's this belief that the systems that we've created, it's obviously not great for us or for the planet, so we have to go. And to me, that shows that we just can't picture what comes next yet. And that's what we really need to be working towards more than anything right now.
Brian, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Brian Kahn is managing editor at Earther. This week he wrote, "What the humans are the virus meme gets wrong."
Coming up, sometimes time feels like a trap. Its presence brings ceaseless demands. What does its absence bring?
This is On the Media.